Chapter 17. As I received it, a loud growl was heard, succeeded by a scratching at the door. Jupiter opened it, and a large Newfoundland, belonging to Legrand, rushed in, leaped upon my shoulders, and loaded me with caresses, for I had shown him much attention during previous visits. When his gambols were over, I looked at the paper, and, to speak the truth, found myself not a little puzzled at what my friend had depicted. "Well," I said, after contemplating it for some minutes, "this is a strange Scarabaeus, I must confess, new to me, never saw anything like it before, unless it was a skull, or a death's head, which it more nearly resembles than anything else that has come under my observation." "A death's head?" echoed Legrand. "Yes, well, it has something of that appearance upon paper, no doubt. The two upper black spots look like eyes, eh? And the longer one at the bottom like a mouth, and then the shape of the whole is oval." "Perhaps so," said I. "But, Legrand, I fear you are no artist. I must wait until I see the beetle itself, if I am to form any idea of its personal appearance." "Well, I don't know," said he, a little nettled. "I draw tolerably, should do it at least, have had good masters, and flatter myself that I am not quite a blockhead." "But, my dear fellow, you are joking then," said I. "This is a very passable skull indeed. I may say that it is a very excellent skull, according to the vulgar notions about such specimens of physiology, and your Scarabaeus must be the queerest Scarabaeus in the world, if it resembles it. Why, we may get up a very thrilling bit of superstition upon this hint. I presume you will call the bug Scarabaeus capitominus, or something of that kind. There are many similar titles in the natural histories. But where are the antennae you spoke of?" "The antennae," said Legrand, who seemed to be getting unaccountably warm upon the subject. "I am sure you must see the antennae. I made them as distinct as they are in the original insect, and I presume that is sufficient." "Well, well," I said. "Perhaps you have still. I don't see them," and I handed him the paper without additional remark, not wishing to ruffle his temper, but I was much surprised at the turn affairs had taken. His ill humor puzzled me, and, as for the drawing of the beetle, there were positively no antennae visible, and the whole did bear a very close resemblance to the ordinary cuts of a death's head. He received the paper very peevishly, and was about to crumple it, apparently to throw it in the fire, when a casual glance at the design seemed suddenly to rivet his attention. In an instant his face grew violently red, in another excessively pale. For some minutes he continued to scrutinize the drawing minutely where he sat. At length he arose, took a candle from the table, and proceeded to seat himself upon a sea chest in the farthest corner of the room. Here again he made an anxious examination of the paper, turning it in all directions. He said nothing, however, and his conduct greatly astonished me. Yet I thought it prudent not to exacerbate the growing moodiness of his temper by any comment. Presently he took from his coat pocket a wallet, placed the paper carefully in it, and deposited both in a writing desk, which he locked. He now grew more composed in his demeanor, but his original air of enthusiasm had quite disappeared. Yet he seemed not so much sulky as abstracted. As the evening wore away, he became more and more absorbed in reverie, from which no sallies of mine could arouse him. It had been my intention to pass the night at the hut, as I had frequently done before, but, seeing my host in this mood, I deemed it proper to take leave. He did not press me to remain, but, as I departed, he shook my hand with even more than his usual cordiality. It was about a month after this, and during the interval I had seen nothing of Legrand, when I received a visit, at Charleston, from his man, Jupiter. I had never seen the good old negro look so dispirited, and I feared that some serious disaster had befallen my friend. "Well, Jup," said I, "what is the matter now? How is your master?" "Why, to speak the truth, massa, him not so very well as mought be." "Not well? I am truly sorry to hear it. What does he complain of? Dar. Dots it. Him neber plain of notin but him very sick for all that. Very sick, Jupiter, why didn't you say so at once? Is he confined to bed? No, daddy ain't. He ain't finna nowhere. That's just war the shoe pinch. My mind has got to be very heavy about poor Massa Will. Jupiter, I should like to understand what it is you are talking about. You say your master is sick. Hasn't he told you what ails him? Why, Massa, tain't worthwhile for to get mad about the matter. Massa Will say nothing at all ain't the matter with him, but then, what make him go about looking this here way, with he head down, and he soldiers up, and as white as a goose. And then he keep a siffin all the time, keep say what, Jupiter? Keep say siffin with the figures on the slate, the queerest figures I ever did see. I's getting to be scared, I tell you. Hap for to keep mighty tight eye pon him maneuvers. Totter day he give me slip for the sun up, and was gone the whole ob the blessed day. I had a big stick ready cut for to give him deuced good beating when he did come, but I sich a fool that I hadn't the heart arter all he looked so very poorly. Eh? What? Ah yes. Upon the whole I think you had better not be too severe with the poor fellow. Don't flog him, Jupiter. He can't very well stand it, but can you form no idea of what has occasioned this illness, or rather this change of conduct? Has anything unpleasant happened since I saw you? No, Massa, they ain't been nothing unpleasant since then. 'Twas for then I'm feared 'twas the very day you was there. How? What do you mean? Why, Massa, I mean the bug there now. The what? The bug. I'm very certain that Massa Will been bit somewhere about the head by that cool bug. And what cause have you, Jupiter, for such a supposition? Claws enough, Massa, and mouth too. I never did see such a deuced bug. He kick, and he bite ever riding what come near him. Massa Will catch him fuss, but that for to let him go gin mighty quick, I tell you then was the time he must ha got the bite. I didn't like the look of the bug mouth, myself, no-ho, so I wouldn't take hold o' him with my finger, but I catch him with a piece o' paper that I found. I wrap him up in the paper, and stuff a piece of it in the mouth. That was the way. And you think, then, that your master was really bitten by the beetle, and that the bite made him sick? I don't think nothing about it, I knows it. What make him dream about the ghoul so much, if tain't cause he bit by the ghoul bug? I's heard about them ghoul bugs for this. But how do you know he dreams about gold? How I know? Why, cause he talk about it in he sleep, that's how I knows. Well, Jup, perhaps you are right, but to what fortunate circumstance am I to attribute the honor of a visit from you today? What the matter, Massa? Did you bring any message from Mr. Legrand? No, Massa, I bring this here pistle, and here Jupiter handed me a note which ran thus. My dear, why have I not seen you for so long a time? I hope you have not been so foolish as to take offense at any little brusquery of mine, but no, that is improbable. Since I saw you, I have had great cause for anxiety. I have something to tell you, yet scarcely know how to tell it, or whether I should tell it at all. I have not been quite well for some days past, and poor old Jup annoys me, almost beyond endurance, by his well-meant attentions. Would you believe it? He had prepared a huge stick, the other day, with which to chastise me for giving him the slip, and spending the day, soulless, among the hills on the mainland. I verily believe that my ill looks alone saved me a flogging. I have made no addition to my cabinet since we met. If you can, in any way, make it convenient, come over with Jupiter. Do come. I wish to see you tonight, upon business of importance. I assure you that it is of the highest importance. Ever yours, William Legrand. There was something in the tone of this note which gave me great uneasiness. Its whole style differed materially from that of Legrand. What could he be dreaming of? What new crotchet possessed his excitable brain? What usiness of the highest importance could he possibly have to transact? Jupiter's account of him boded no good. I dreaded lest the continued pressure of misfortune had, at length, fairly unsettled the reason of my friend. Without a moment's hesitation, therefore, I prepared to accompany the Negro. Upon reaching the wharf, I noticed a scythe and three spades, all apparently new, lying in the bottom of the boat in which we were to embark. "What is the meaning of all this, Jup?" I inquired. "Him scythe, massa, and spade." "Very true, but what are they doing here?" "Him the scythe, and the spade what massa will sis pon my buying for him in the town, and the devil's own lot of money I had to give for him. But what, in the name of all that is mysterious, is your massa will going to do with scythes and spades?" "That's more than I know, and devil take me, if I don't leave tis more than he know too. But it's all come ob the bug." Finding that no satisfaction was to be obtained of Jupiter, whose whole intellect seemed to be absorbed by E bug, I now stepped into the boat, and made sail. With a fair and strong breeze we soon ran into the little cove to the northward of Fort Moultrie, and a walk of some 2 miles brought us to the hut. It was about 3 p.m. when we arrived. Legrand had been awaiting us in eager expectation. He grasped my hand with a nervous empressement which alarmed me, and strengthened the suspicions already entertained. His countenance was pale even to ghastliness, and his deep-set eyes glared with unnatural luster. After some inquiries respecting his health, I asked him, not knowing what better to say, if he had yet obtained the scarabaeus from Lieutenant G.O. "Yes," he replied, coloring violently, "I got it from him the next morning. Nothing should tempt me to part with that scarabaeus." "Do you know that Jupiter is quite right about it?" "In what way?" I asked, with a sad foreboding at heart. "In supposing it to be a bug of real gold." He said this with an air of profound seriousness, and I felt inexpressibly shocked. "This bug is to make my fortune," he continued, with a triumphant smile, "to reinstate me in my family possessions. Is it any wonder, then, that I prize it? Since fortune has thought fit to bestow it upon me, I have only to use it properly, and I shall arrive at the gold, of which it is the index. Jupiter, bring me that scarabaeus." "What, the bug, massa? I'd rather not go for trouble that bug. You mustn't get him for your own self." Hereupon Legrand arose, with a grave and stately air, and brought me the beetle from a glass case in which it was enclosed. It was a beautiful scarabaeus, and, at that time, unknown to naturalists, of course a great prize in a scientific point of view. There were 2 round black spots near one extremity of the back, and a long one near the other. The scales were exceedingly hard and glossy, with all the appearance of burnished gold. The weight of the insect was very remarkable, and, taking all things into consideration, I could hardly blame Jupiter for his opinion respecting it. But what to make of Legrand's concordance with that opinion, I could not, for the life of me, tell. "I sent for you," said he, in a grandiloquent tone, when I had completed my examination of the beetle, "I sent for you, that I might have your counsel and assistance in furthering the views of fate and of the bug, my dear Legrand," I cried, interrupting him, "you are certainly unwell, and had better use some little precautions. You shall go to bed, and I will remain with you a few days, until you get over this. You are feverish, and feel my pulse," said he. I felt it, and, to say the truth, found not the slightest indication of fever. "But you may be ill, and yet have no fever. Allow me this once to prescribe for you. In the first place, go to bed. In the next, you are mistaken," he interposed. "I am as well as I can expect to be under the excitement which I suffer. If you really wish me well, you will relieve this excitement." "And how is this to be done?" "Very easily. Jupiter and myself are going upon an expedition into the hills, upon the mainland, and, in this expedition, we shall need the aid of some person, in whom we can confide. You are the only one we can trust. Whether we succeed or fail, the excitement which you now perceive in me will be equally allayed." "I am anxious to oblige you in any way," I replied, But do you? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.